Welcome back, listeners. So today I'm going to be talking about the Graham-Leach-Bliley Act, or better known as the GLBA, because that's a lot of names to remember. This is the Financial Modernization Act of 1999 that was brought in by three people, and their names are the law, so Senators Graham, Leach, and Bliley. So this has to do, and the great way to remember it is SPF. It's a purpose of the GLBA. S is safeguarding, P is pretexting, and F is a financial privacy policy. So, we're going to talk about non-public information regarding a customer. So, it's things that you can't look up online. Your social security, bank numbers, information that you have to keep secret, like things that if other people got their hands on it, it would not be good. Birthdays, I don't really consider non-public information. I can look, like, in a way that it was explained to me by someone, is if you can look that information up on Facebook, it is public information. If you cannot look it up on Facebook, consider it private. I used to work in school admissions, and so I had to work with public and private information a lot, and so that's one way that they told me how to distinguish between public and non-public information. Permissible uses of non-public information regarding a customer. You have to notify the customer that there are certain relationships where information may be shared, and then you have to tell them what policies that you have, so they're like, to let them know, hey, like, you know, I have to share this information with the person servicing your loan, but this is how I keep it secure. This is how we collect the information, keep it, and then how they share it. So that is information like when you, Chase will, like, everything that you work with in finance will have how they use non-public information. How do they keep it safe? So as I said before, the purpose of the GLBA is to keep information safe. The first is safeguarding. It is a written security plan to safeguard financial information for customers. So people should not feel like they are going to get all their information taken and someone has their identity when they want to, like, go buy something at a store or pay for a hotel. People should have a relatively safe feeling about doing these card transactions or financial transactions in general. So that's what this law says, is that you have to put safeguarding measures in place so that there's, like, some sense of security about doing these transactions at your business or any business that does financial transactions. So the next one is pretexting. Pretexting kind of has to do with people getting your information without your permission. Companies have to put in measures to make sure that the person requesting the non-public information is you or someone that should have your information. Things like bank balances. You know, you can't access certain people's bank balances. That's there for a reason, and the measures put in place are to make sure that the right people have that information and the wrong people do not have that information. So the financial privacy policy governs the collection and how it is shared. So it's kind of what I talked about in the earlier one, the permissible use. That one says that you must have plans in place to show how do you use it, how do you share it, how do you keep it safe. And then it also gives people the option to say, I don't want you sharing this information. It's kind of nice. And it's just an explanation. So people can say, oh, they told me how they keep it. They told me how they share it, etc. It helps people have some kind of security. Requirements for written privacy policy disclosures. You have to talk about the security. You have to say, like, how you protect against the threats and the hazards. You know, you kind of have to acknowledge that there are threats and hazards and that you as a company address it and actively work to protect your customers' information. And then protecting against unauthorized access, like pretexting, people trying to get your information under false pretenses. So All these together are the S, P, and F in the Gramm-Leach-Bliley Act. Many times, the GLBA is also talked very closely in tandem with the Do Not Call Registry, which was put in 2003 as telemarketers became more and more annoying for people. They wanted to figure out a way to like make sure that people could opt out of having telemarketers pestering them. And then part of that is, putting people on a Do Not Call Registry to make sure that they aren't being bothered, and having people solicit them at every hour of the day. So you may not, like the hours for permissible phone calls would be 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. in the area that the person that you are trying to call is. So if you're in East Coast time calling the West Coast with a 3 hour time difference, if you're in the East Coast, it doesn't matter if it's between 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. If the place you're calling is not in that time, then that is a violation. So it's not where you're calling from, it's a time zone of what where you are calling to that matters. Alrighty, we now are going to talk about the Do Not Call list, which is kind of part of the Gramm-Leach-Bliley Act. Written policies for maintaining do not call lists. You have to check the database every 31 days, and the company will keep an internal list, and you will have the national database. So, both need to be consulted. Precautions to protect customer information. This kind of goes back into FACTA. Don't leave personal information out on the desk where people can see it. Lock it up at the end of the day, and don't throw it away in the waste bin. Make sure that you're putting it into like a locked shred box, shredding it, burning it, whatever. I used to work for a company that you would get in trouble if you left your desk and anything was out face up. So you had to flip every document on your desk over and you couldn't throw anything away. They had shred bins all around the office. So it made it actually fairly easy, but that was kind of my introduction to the FACTA Act. Purpose of making the Do Not Call Registry, make sure that people aren't being harassed by telemarketers, protection for people so they don't have to get spammed, allowing people to opt out from calls, and permissible solicitation scenarios. So even if they are on the Do Not Call list, you may call them until 18 months if they have the last transaction. So say they complete a transaction 18 months after that. If they reach out and inquire, even if they're on the Do Not Call list, you have 3 months after the last inquiry. A Do Not Call request goes through donotcall.gov. There's a 1-800 number that you can call. It's free, and you register your number, and then you go through that with the FTC. Retention of information after solicitation. Records to document must be maintained for 24 months, especially that you've been checking the list, checking every 31 days. Violation will be $42,530, fine as each call that you make, not per day that you're doing this. And each call is seen as a separate incident, so that's why you get that $42,000 fine every single call that you make to a do not call number. And the do not call doesn't limit calls by political organizations, charities, or surveys. So obviously, we are not one of those, so we are liable to the Do Not Call Act.
Thank you.